everybody. Happy Friday. It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Ben Ennis, and Blue Jays take game one of their four-game series in Minnesota against the Twins 9-3. I did mention that there are some parallels to 2015. Weird how the schedule works, because it was around the same time in 2015 the Blue Jays were playing the Twins, and again, it was a four-game series, although that was in Toronto. They were a game back in Minnesota when they started that series on August 3rd, 2015, after the trade deadline. David Price made his first start as a member of the Blue Jays. They won 5-1. It was the second of 11 straight wins for the Blue Jays. They swept that series, obviously, and never looked back, making the playoffs and giving the eventual World Series champs a run for their money. And if not for some umpiring decisions in Game 6 of the ALCS, maybe we were talking about a different result in 2015. Well, pretty good result for the Blue Jays yesterday in Minnesota after they destroyed the Minnesota Twins bullpen, a bullpen that was revamped at the trade deadline. Also, in Calgary, they probably didn't anticipate being in this good a move mood about their hockey team just a couple of months ago, after Johnny Gaudreau at the last second decides he's off to Columbus of all places. And then, like, moments later, Matthew Tkachuk says, "I'm not signing an extension. Get me the hell out of here." Well, not only do they swing the incredible trade for a Hart Trophy finalist in Jonathan Huberdeau, along with Mackenzie Weegar, now he's signed an extension, an 8-year deal worth $84 million, which will, you know, pay him into his late 30s. But yeah, he was a pending free agent at the conclusion of this season. They have certainty now with a guy who's a 100-point scorer a season ago. So lots to talk about today. And let's do so with our next guest, who is today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles. And our top story is me getting a chance to talk to Damian Cox. How's it going, Damian?
I'm fine. I'm so pleased. Last time we chatted, you were positively overwrought over the Leafs goaltending situation. Today, you're upbeat. The Blue Jays, Jonathan Huberdeau. It's middle of summer. I'm really pleased to hear things have picked up since we last chatted.
Things were fine then, and they remain fine. At least I'm not, like, tweeting at you. Man, you just love to pick up the fights on Twitter. I stay away from that stuff. Like, oh, you just love it. You live for it.
No. Every once in a while, I chirp in and say something smart alecky, but generally speaking, I, you know, live and let live sort of thing. That's my new motto. I'm trying to live by that.
Okay.
How am I doing?
Not so well.
Oh, dang.
All right. You know what? Let's start with a little Blue Jays. We'll get more into the Blue Jays with Dan Schulman in the back half of this hour. But Whit Merrifield, like, it caught me by surprise yesterday, because we were on the air while he was doing his media availability, and we're all waiting with bated breath. What's he gonna say? Is he going to play in 2 weeks? Does he still have to decide? And then, you know, it turns out that he was actually already vaccinated, because he knew either he was going to be traded to the Blue Jays or maybe somebody else in the American League East and need to come to Toronto, or somebody in the American League and need to play in Toronto in the postseason. Well, how do you think the Blue Jays and Whit Merrifield handled that entire saga? It was a couple of days. It started really gaining steam south of the border as far as, like, a top news story before he made that media availability, and now it's like it was much ado about nothing.
Well, I was going to say it was much ado about nothing, and I guess it's handled fine. I don't know why the coyness was so important. Maybe I am vaccinated, maybe I'm not. You'll just have to wait and see. Like, you know, why not just say, absolutely, this is what I'm going to do. And if you're willing to be vaccinated because you've been traded, why weren't you vaccinated before? Unless, did I miss the bulletin where COVID skipped the United States of America? Mm. Like, didn't a lot of people die of this? I know Whit's, I'm sure, a very principled guy who has his own beliefs on these things. But, you know, I don't know why it takes a baseball trade to follow science and public health protocols to the minimum. I guess that's what he did, and people are happy about that. And if he hits the baseball and the Blue Jays do well with him, everybody will think he's a genius. But I just don't understand the coyness, and I don't understand the reluctance. I guess people are able to choose what they want to do, and he did.
Yeah, no, what cracks me up is the timeline on these things, because he had a comment like 22 days ago where he said that the risk was not worth it for him. And then somewhere between then and 14 days ago, he decided, yeah, you know what? It actually was worth it. So like within 8 days, he changed his mind.
And seriously, pal, what risk? Explain the science to me that you felt the risk was unreasonable. I mean, you know, that highly paid professional athletes with the access to the finest medicine, the finest, access to knowledge and whatever, if they require it. But he's got his own ideas on these things. You know, I don't understand these people, but I suppose, you know, if they're willing to live with the consequences, and apparently he was, because he wasn't able to cross the border last time. I guess the Royals were up this way. If he's willing to live with the consequences and other things he can or cannot do, more power to him, I guess. I don't get it, but freedom of choice. And I do believe that, you know, I do believe that people are free to choose as long as they're willing to live with the consequences that come along with that choice.
Right. And people are free to criticize that and comment on it. But that we have to shut down the take sphere for Whit Merrifield, because he's vaccinated. Yeah. And he will be in Toronto on Thursday when the Blue Jays wrap up this road trip. All right, let's get to the Calgary thing, because boy, it really felt like it was just the center of sadness in the National Hockey League was going to be in Calgary, the way this offseason was going. Now it's totally reversed, Damian. Like, what do you make of the last month for the Flames?
Well, I mean, I think this is a real mix of hockey, public relations, and image that we've gone through in Calgary. And, you know, so there are so many parts to this that are pro Flames, not so pro Flames, pro Panthers. I mean, I think the number one thing probably that Calgary fans care about is Jonathan Huberdeau is a heck of a hockey player, and they've got him locked up for 8 years. So that's good. Start there. Now he's 29 years old. This contract will kick in when he's 30, I believe. So he's going to be 38 years old. I think Toronto Maple Leaf fans with John Tavares and his contract might have some thoughts on what happens to hockey players after a certain age and what you can reasonably expect a player can do when he's 30 and what he can do when he's 35. The other thing, too, is that the Calgary Flames didn't just lose or trade Matthew Tkachuk. They traded Matthew Tkachuk and lost Johnny Gaudreau. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Huberdeau, on his best day, he can't compensate for the loss of both of those players. So in my mind, the front lines of the Calgary Flames are still missing a big chunk. Mackenzie Weegar on the back end, he'll help. Mm-hmm. He's a good player.
Yeah, 23-minute-a-night right-handed defenseman.
Yeah, now he played on a team that didn't play any defense at all, and he's got to go play for Daryl Sutter now, and we'll see how he does. I would expect that he'll be a good player in Calgary, too, but I'm not going to jump up and down and think he's a difference maker in the same way that Gaudreau or Tkachuk or Huberdeau are. So he's sort of part of the conversation, but not the main part of the conversation. So if you look at the Calgary Flames from where they were at the end of last year, they're minus two stars. They've got one back, and that star is older and now locked into 8 years at a very big number. Let's face it, Jonathan Huberdeau had all the leverage, right? He had all the leverage, and if this deal doesn't work out, Brad Treliving's not going to be around to explain it anymore in 5 years if it's not working, because he'll be out of work in Calgary. So, you know, I think it's something the Flames had to do. They had to make a statement that all good players don't immediately want to leave Calgary. That was an important statement for them made. So they're willing to probably overpay for Huberdeau. But, you know, it's up to him now to prove it that he's worth the money and he can live with the scrutiny that comes in playing in Calgary, which is much, much, much greater than it is playing in Florida. So he's going to be a fascinating guy to watch this season. And it'll be really interesting on the nights where Gaudreau and Tkachuk come back to play and how Flames fans respond to them.
Oh, I can't wait for that. That's going to be must-watch TV. All right, you knew I was going to do this. I was going to make a comparison to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was going to bring the Leafs.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Of course. Well, and you know why I would, because they have also an American superstar who is also staring down the final year of his contract. Yep. Now, it's not a fair comparison because Toronto is not Calgary, and there's many different factors, but maybe not. Like, do you think that this is a Flames-specific thing where you had two players say, get me the hell out of here, and one joined a very good hockey team in Florida, and the other one joined a hockey team in Columbus, but south of the border? Like, is it fair to think about Austin Matthews and the Toronto Maple Leafs in regards to this Flames, what was almost a fiasco?
Well, I think it could be a Canada thing for American players, for starters, but not all American players are created equal. Not all think equally. Some look at things differently. And Austin Matthews, I assume, is different than Matthew Tkachuk, who's different than Johnny Gaudreau, who's different than, you know, name your favorite American player, you know, playing somewhere else. So I think you have to try to, evaluate that. I mean, Jack Campbell is an American player, and he sounds like he's thrilled to go to and play in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. So not every American player can be slotted into the same situation. Now, the one thing I think we do know is that there are uneven tax situations in the U.S. That may be a priority for Austin Matthews. I don't know. I would think by the time it comes for him to make a decision, he's already going to have more money 10 times over than he and his family will ever need. So what is this decision based on? Where he wants to play, what kind of climate he wants to live in, what kind of market he wants to play in. He's proven he can be a superstar in maybe the toughest market in the league. So that's not going to bother him. So if not Toronto, where? Does he want to be a New York Ranger? Does he want to be an LA King? These are things that I'm sure in his heart of hearts are things that he is thinking at. And as an athlete who's proven he's among the best, or maybe the best in the game, he's going to have his chance to choose. I don't pretend to know what he's going to do, and I don't think anybody else really knows except him, his family, and his closest friends. But I wouldn't think because Matthew Tkachuk left, automatically Austin Matthews is going to leave. I certainly don't think he's going to leave to go play in a 5,000-seat arena in his home state.
No.
That makes no sense at all. But may he want to live in a warm climate where he doesn't have to bundle up with the rest of us in middle? Yeah, he might. He might want to do that.
Yeah, but he also might want to pay attention to Max Pacioretty's comments on the Raw Knuckles podcast, which I made sure you saw before coming on.
I saw that.
And I talked about it a little bit yesterday where he it sounds good to go to a place where people are excited if you win in Las Vegas, but they don't care if you lose because, you go back to being irrelevant and they go back to the casino, that there was a lack of accountability. Now, he did talk about the organization being a little bit like that, but he also, it was also referenced that the pressures of the city are not the same naturally as Montreal, and maybe that's not a good thing, that maybe, the grass isn't always greener for these guys that want to take the pressure off because, you are supposed to want that pressure. That is supposed to be a good thing if you're a professional athlete and you want to compete at the highest level.
Yeah, and look, I think, as I mentioned, I think Austin Matthews has proved that playing with the pressure of Toronto doesn't bother him. I'm not sure what to make of those Pacioretty comments. First of all, a couple of times I met him, I thought he was one of the really nice people in the NHL. Second, he didn't play that well in Vegas, and they traded him, so maybe he doesn't have the most warm feelings towards Vegas management. And, he played much better hockey in Montreal. And maybe he thinks in his heart of hearts he needed that push of playing in a demanding hockey environment. And he couldn't, perform as well in a less demanding environment. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Vegas has been a really good hockey team until last year. And even then, you could look at their injury situation and the players they didn't have and the trade for Jack Eichel and think there were reasons why they missed the playoffs. I think, it's like I said for years, can every NHL player succeed in Toronto? No. Mm-hmm. Just like not every Major League Baseball player can succeed as a Yankee. can every major league, can every NHL player succeed and play well in a place like Vegas or a player or in Florida, you know, in Sunrise, Florida, or in Dallas or in Ottawa? And the answer is no. So I think any team's management, their job is to find players who not only have the ability to play well and not only fit into their cap structure, but also have the mentality that they're going to succeed in that city. And not, it's, you know, it's not one city fits all or all players fit in one. So obviously Pacioretty doesn't feel like Vegas was for him. I have no idea how he's going to feel about Raleigh. You know, I don't think that's going to be any more demanding than Vegas as a city. So we'll see.
No, yeah, it did sound a lot like sour grapes, to be
honest.
I think there's something there. I want to get your take on this. I mean, the whole Hockey Canada thing, but so recently we just found out that Canada's regional hockey federations, they issued a letter threatening to withhold dues because they were being used for these payoffs for sexual assault. Like the dues that I pay, my kid plays hockey in now Burlington. It used to be Oakville, and I have to pay for him to play. And that part of that payment goes to Hockey Canada. And some of that money is being used in these payoffs of sexual assault cases that never reached the courts, settlements. And this has been happening for years. Like, how am I supposed to feel about this? Because, yeah, like I said, like I have skin in the game. Like, I have children that play hockey. I pay into this. How am I supposed to feel about this?
Yeah, no, and well, look, I'm the same. I've got a daughter who's in her last year, you know, playing, and I feel the same, except I've had four kids go through this. So means I've been paying this for how many years to support, or this fund that they wanted to keep secret and was kind of kept off the books. I mean, the whole thing stinks from the top to the bottom. The fact that no Hockey Canada person has resigned or lost their job or member of the board of directors has quit and said, you know, or anything, I think is shocking, shocking to say the least. I think it's good that these individual provincial organizations are standing up and demanding something. What they'll be able to do, I'm not so sure. But the part that really jumps out at me whenever I think about this is if we hadn't found out about this because of a news story in the spring, they would still be doing it.
Yep.
They wouldn't have changed anything. And I think that was clear in their first visit to Parliament Hill and pretty clear on the second visit, although at least on the second visit, they managed to squeeze out a, I'm sorry, we shouldn't have done that kind of thing. And I don't think that was their feeling the way the first time around. It was more, well, that's just part of doing business. Whatever Hockey Canada does going forward, and I'm not even sure Hockey Canada is going to be the same again for a long period of time. Whatever they do, they've got to be a lot more transparent. And even calling this, like, the part that really gets me is calling it the National Equity Fund, not the fund we use to pay off women to shut them up after our athletes have misbehaved fund. They didn't call it that. They gave it the name of a National Equity Fund, which lets you know they were trying to hide something. They knew that people wouldn't accept what they were doing, so they had to hide it under a phony name and not tell people what was going on. And to me, you know, that is what is unforgivable. I mean, it's unforgivable. Mm-hmm. And look, I know Scott Smith. I've golfed with Scott Smith. I think he's a really nice guy. And I'm just shocked that he thinks that this can just keep going, that they'll fix their own problems. I think I just don't think that's even remotely possible. There was a report last week that the head of the board of directors, you know, put forth a motion for his removal and it was defeated. I can't see how Scott can go on. And I can't see, quite frankly, how members of that board can go on. They should resign en masse. They need to bring in new people, new blood with new philosophies, and particularly a spirit of openness, transparency, and honesty that has not existed with Hockey Canada. maybe ever. That's the only way this thing gets out of the rut it's in. What they're hoping is that the World Juniors are going to be next month and everybody's going to start cheering and everybody's going to forget about what all the bad stuff they've done. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, and I have no recourse. It's not like I'm going to, you know, my kid's not going to play hockey. I'm going to boycott hockey. Like, I can't do that, obviously. So that it is heartening. You're right that these local federations are taking a stand here because they're the only ones that can, because I can't as an individual. Unless you choose not to watch the World Juniors, which is, maybe the World Juniors in August is something that I can avoid. But there's for the individual to just make a statement with their wallet. Is there even a secondary option? Is there like a private entity that operates in the hockey sphere? If there was, I would look into it. But I can't deprive my 6-year-old of getting to play hockey because I think Hockey Canada stinks.
Well, and my free advice to Scott Smith, if he's going to stay on as CEO, is to say, look, we're going to put a moratorium on taking these fees until we sort some of this stuff out. That seems to me the absolute least Hockey Canada and its current management team could do. We're going to take a 1-year pause. People, keep your money. We're not taking it because we understand that we've done some things that offend people, and we're going to try to fix it before we even are worthy of taking your money again. But I haven't heard them doing that, so I guess I better not hold my breath.
No, they need a total reset. It feels like even the name, like call it Canada Hockey now or something. Like it honestly, like you need like to be like the Tampa Bay Devil Rays went to the Rays or something. Like I don't, Hockey Canada just like it. Yeah, I don't know. It's not good.
Yeah,
I'll leave it at that. Yeah. It is not good. Damien, you're good, and you're very helpful to come on
well,
a radio program.
I'm a little hurt. I'm a little hurt actually.
Why is that?
Well, not one reference to Maple Leaf Historian, not even one. I was establishing an entire new career based on that introduction, and now it's gone.
Yeah, it does say it in my lineup. All right, there goes Maple Leafs Historian, Damien Cox. Thanks,
bye-bye,
Damien.
Bye-bye, Damien. See ya.
There's Damien Cox of the Toronto Star, and he was today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dan Shulman, Blue Jays and Twins continuing their 4-game series in Minnesota. There was a moment there. Well, first of all, it looked like it was going to be a pitcher's duel. I think we had dueling no hitters into the 5th inning, but it really did feel like with the Blue Jays trailing 1-0 in that game and the Twins with the total redo of their bullpen and Emilio Pagan coming out of the bullpen and throwing his gas, and then after him, it was going to be maybe Michael Fulmer and then, Johan Duran, who throws 103, and then the new acquisition closer, Jorge Lopez, I was going to come on the radio today and talk about, well, see, that's why people were upset the Blue Jays didn't do more, because the Twins did what teams have to do in the postseason or have the ability to do. Starter goes 5, and then the shutdown bullpen takes them the rest of the way. Instead, Pagan and the rest of the bullpen got smashed to smithereens, and the Blue Jays take advantage, taking game one of this series, and they end up with 9 runs and out-hitting the Twins 13-3, and Bo Bichette in his new spot in the lineup, he has 3 hits, and Vlad Jr. goes 2-for-5, including a 1-iron over the wall in left, and Alek Manoah is wild, but wildly effective. Picking up his 12th win of the season. We'll talk to the man who will call game 2 of this series tonight on Sportsnet, Dan Shulman, next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Ben Ennis. Blue Jays take game one in Minnesota. Yesterday, 9-3. Everything goes well. I mean, Alec Manoah walked a bunch of people, hit a guy. That's fine. That's what he does. He only allowed two earned runs on two hits. ERA at 2.45, and he's 12-5. Whit Merrifield had a couple of strikeouts to start the game, then had a couple of hits, including an RBI and a run scored, and he's moving well on the base paths. All's good in Blue Jays land, except for what's going on with George Springer. I mean, George Springer also had a hit and an RBI and a walk, and he had a fly ball deep to the outfield. But, like, I'm in pain watching George Springer try and play baseball on a daily basis. And he missed the two games in Tampa, which you know he sorely wanted to play in. He would have loved to have played in those games against the Rays, a division rival, somebody you could either meet in the postseason or somebody you're battling with in the American League wildcard race. Missed those after the off day on Monday. All right. That's fine. Plays yesterday as the DH, and every check swing, every swing and miss, every swing that makes contact, like every part of watching George Springer, who's only playing 50% of the game, it's concerning a little bit to me. And it does remind me of it was a totally different injury, but it was one that we thought, boy, this is something he's going to try and play with, but it's going to be very difficult to do so. And maybe, you know, some extended time away from the game on the IL is in his best interest. And, of course, they were forced into that situation. Totally different with the leg as opposed to the elbow. But, boy, that guy looks like he's in a little bit of pain. We'll see if he's in the lineup again today. But I think there's a lot of DHing in George Springer's future. Let's talk to Dan Shulman ahead of game 2 of 4. Blue Jays and Twins tonight in Minnesota. How's it going, Dan?
Good, Ben. How you doing?
Doing all right. So what are we to make of George Springer, who had a hit and, you know, had a walk, and he produced yesterday, but I'm in pain watching him.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. And, I think he probably wants more than anybody to be out there because he went through this last year too, right? It's 2 years in a row with a new team that this has happened, and I'm sure it's driving him absolutely nuts. But it sure looks and sounds and feels like it's the kind of thing that they and he are going to have to try to manage as best they can for the rest of the season and hope that he can play through it.
Whit Merrifield made all the plays in center field. I wasn't 100% sure how he would look out there, but it feels like, Dan, that if George Springer's in the lineup, it's going to be as the DH. It's hard for me to imagine that he's doing much outfield work, especially in the regular season, to try and rest that elbow.
It's hard to say. I mean, we've had this before, and then he pops back into center field for a day or two, and then he's out again, and then he's back in, and then he's DHing. So I don't know enough about it to predict, you know, how much center field he's going to be able to play going forward. But I do think part of the reason that Whit Merrifield was acquired was to be another option in center field in case George Springer can't play out there. So, and he's going to be fine out there. I think he's going to be totally fine. So whether it's him or Tapia, they've got, you know, two decent options to play in center field if Springer can't. The problem, you know, the Springer thing has like a domino effect, right? If he can hit but he can't play center and then he's DHing a lot, that cuts into Kirk's at-bats a little bit, and maybe that cuts into Jansen's time behind the plate, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's one of those things that they're going to have to juggle every day. And just the addition of Merrifield gives them another quality player. So Tabby and I were talking like an hour ago, you know, we're going to have this game every day called Guess the Lineup, because it's going to be hard to figure out which guys are not in there, because even with Springer banged up, the addition of Merrifield gives them, you know, yet another good player, in my opinion, to throw in there. And then two or three guys are going to have to sit every day.
Yeah, and he can play all over the place. And yesterday was a little bit surprising to see Bo knock down one spot in the lineup to five. And I know correlation, not causation, but then he goes out and has a three-hit game. What do you make of Bo's season as a whole? Because it has, like, there's just really no question, it's been disappointing really start to finish. There's been perilously few moments where he looked like the Bo that led the American League in hits a season ago. There's certainly time left to get closer to that guy. Like, are there signs that that's happening?
I mean, it happens, you know, for a little while, but I don't even remember like a 7 to 10 day period where he looked like that guy, you know, and And he was really good last year. Go back and look at his numbers in his rookie season. His OPS was like 920 or something in his rookie season. That was actually his best year offensively. He's never, and I don't want to say locked in, he's just never looked as comfortable at the plate this year for any prolonged stretch. And I think he's a bit of a perfectionist, and I think it's probably bothering the heck out of him. Now, to his credit, in my opinion, he has not taken it out in the field with him. He really hasn't. And that can happen. And then you've really got a problem. So, but, you know, they'd love more out of him. They're getting more out of Vladdy right now. Like, Vladdy now looks pretty close to 2021 Vladdy, which is obviously a great thing. But if Bo could find it and become 2021 Bo or 2020 Bo or whatever Bo you want to pick, that would be a huge thing. And in terms of dropping him down to fifth, you know, if you take emotion out of it and you just look at it, you know, just through the numbers and the logic, Teoscar is hitting better. And Teoscar hitting fourth is probably the move right now. So, you know, I don't know what the conversation was like. The funny part is in our meeting with John Schneider yesterday, there was so much else going on with Merrifield and Bass and Pop and White. Nobody even asked Schneider, so how about Bo dropping down to fifth? Nobody even asked the question because everybody was so caught up in all of the new players. So, but, you know, Teoscar deserves it the way that he's swinging right now.
Yeah, no, and that was a no-doubtery hit yesterday. So, yeah, and Bo with the glove has been good. You know, average defense at shortstop. In fact, the StatCast numbers, outs above average, have him as a plus defender. He's two outs above average defensively. You know what was shocking, though, yesterday that was kind of going around Twitter is that Matt Chapman, according to those same numbers, like a below-average defender. He's minus one outs above average. Dan, what do we do with that?
It's funny because I saw a tweet about it today, so I actually messaged with Mike Petriello, who I know was on the Fan a couple of hours ago, and I said, Mike, make this make sense to me. I said, here's what my eye test is telling me, and I'm not arguing with the numbers, but make this make sense to me. And he prefaced it by saying, which he did on the radio again a couple of hours ago, he's not out here trying to tell people Matt Chapman's a bad third baseman, because he's not, obviously. But he says what the numbers show is that, you know, there was a double clutch or couldn't get it out of his glove. It was more on the finishing the play. Like, he gets to the balls, but there have been a few where he hasn't finished the play. And I said to him, Mike, I'm not arguing with you at all, because, you know, I'm not smart enough to argue with the numbers. I said, I can't tell you how many plays he's made where we've gone, wow. You know, the tricky hop, you know how he charges in, yep, gets that tricky short hop and makes the throw. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've got red stars in my book. Now, is there a little confirmation bias there? I think he's good, therefore he's good. Again, I don't know. And I don't know enough about the under, you know, I'm pretty sure defensive metrics aren't quite as advanced as offensive metrics and pitching metrics. I would venture to say that fairly confidently. And I still think he's a very, very good third baseman, defensively. And I think everybody in the Blue Jays organization would feel the same way. So the numbers are what the numbers are, but, to me, he's been great.
Yeah, no, me too. And yeah, we don't have to just take the numbers and accept them as gospel. We can use them as part of the conversation and try to understand them better. But especially when we're talking about defensive numbers, you're right. Yeah, it's anything but gospel. I'm enjoying this version of Lourdes Gurriel Jr., especially when he comes up with big RBIs. But it should be mentioned that he has the lowest slugging percentage of his career. But yeah, okay, it seems clear that he just made a trade-off there. I would like to look up at a scoreboard and see myself with a nice, like, 316 average, too. But I do wonder if that's, you know, this guy is going to be a free agent in a couple years, maybe. I wonder if that's the most prudent thing to do, is to sacrifice bombs, which are the best thing you can do in baseball for average and on base.
You know, that's a decision, obviously, that he made, and he was so cold at the beginning of the season. It's funny, you know, you and me and those of us who have watched him for a few years, you know he's cold at the beginning of the year, but then you go, well, it's Lourdes. He's going to heat up. He's going to have that hot streak because he's Lourdes. So you kind of assume it's going to come. This hot streak's been hotter in terms of contact and average, but as you say, the power hasn't been there. I don't know if he goes for this season anyways. I don't think he consciously makes a decision to go back. I think he's got a very good idea about how pitchers are trying to pitch him right now, and I think he's taken his base hits and taken his RBIs. And yes, his slug is down, but his OPS is still, I'm in the dugout, so I don't have it in front of me, but it feels like it's around 800, I think, which is really good.
Yep.
And he's coming up. It feels to me, again, maybe there's a little bit of confirmation bias here, but it feels to me like he's coming up with big hits in big moments. Like he's getting that glue RBI single in the middle before somebody else hits a bomb, you know, before Chapman hits one out, or if he's at the top of the order, then maybe, somebody after Teoscar hits one out. But I think he's coming up not just with hits, but with important hits, with men in scoring position, runners in scoring position. And I think right now you just stick with it. They've got a lot of power in this lineup. I think if they have guys, if they have more men on base, I think everything really starts to move. You know, everything can get exponentially better just as they get more men on base. Keep the line moving. They're going to hit their home runs. They're going to run into a few. They're too good not to. They've got too much power not to. But I love the role that he's playing right now, and I think he's a huge reason why the bottom of the lineup has been so productive.
No, honestly, I think he's a walking test case in regards to the evaluation of OPS. OPS is not everything either because – you know, a point of on base is more valuable than a point of slugging. It just is. Because,
correct.
Yeah.
So let's go weighted runs created plus. Let's go there.
Okay. Well, I don't have that up now. Come on. You got to give me a heads up on that.
I'm sorry.
But he does.
If it means anything to you, I didn't see that one coming. I just blurted that out. You're right. We talk about OPS a lot because on the next level, it's the easiest one to digest. But there are levels beyond that in terms of validity and accuracy, and certainly something like weighted run created plus is that. I would venture to say the numbers are really good. Look, he's a really good player right now. I would just say to him, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. I wouldn't mess with him at all. Center field, right field. I know he's not hitting for much power, but just keep the line moving, drive in some runs, traffic on the bases. It's all good.
No, 100%. And he has a .366 on base, too, which makes me think that, you know, the idea of him hitting leadoff when George Springer wasn't in the lineup made a whole lot of sense. And who are you going to knock out of the top half of this lineup right now, I guess? But, yeah, no, to have a guy with that type of on base, most of it has been achieved through batting average, but still, he's having a tremendous, tremendous season. So I imagine it's just like a matter of time until we hear officially that it is Mitch White starting tomorrow. Dan, my question for you is, what happens if somebody else goes down? Like now we're back into Thomas Hatch territory, aren't we?
Yeah. Chabby and I talked about that about an hour ago. So, it's got to be Mitch White. We'll find out when we talk with John Schneider in about half an hour. But you're right. There is no easy choice as next man up. Next man up would have been Max Castillo, but he's in Kansas City or Omaha, wherever he is right now. So it's probably, again, like a Casey Lawrence or somebody like that if somebody else were to get hurt, or a bullpen day, or if you're lucky enough that there's an off day coming up in the next few days, you can, you know, skip that spot and manipulate it a little bit. And I think the Blue Jays, the front office is probably holding their collective breath a little bit that nothing like that happens before Ross Stripling comes back. Because when Stripling comes back, then you've got one layer of insurance, whether it's, and I assume it's White, you know, that Stripling would go right back into the rotation, but we'll see how Kikuchi pitches his next couple of times through, you know, so somebody will be the sixth guy and available for multiple innings or long relief or something like that. But in the short term, the next couple of turns through the rotation, it's, pray for no more comebackers, right? Like enough is enough already.
100%. Before that you go, I thought this was going to be a radio program in which I talked about how, you know what, this is why people were upset the Blue Jays didn't do a little bit more in the bullpen, because look at that Twins team. They handed it over to Michael Fulmer and Duran and Lopez, and they only needed their starter to go five, except, you know, they couldn't get it to those guys. But you could see a scenario where that almost played out yesterday, Dan.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they loaded up in the bullpen. They've got four legit guys to give them an inning each at the end. And that's why, having a lead after five is almost the most important thing in baseball right now, or at five or six, because it's so hard to come back against quality bullpens. You kind of got to get to a guy early. It's not about getting a guy's pitch count. I'm getting him out of the game, the starter. It's about scoring runs off him and having the lead going into the fifth or sixth inning. So, you know, the Blue Jays are hoping that they will be able to develop that over the next couple of months. And obviously, I mean, Bass and Pop are going to help. There's no question. I don't think they're going to help in the same way that Fulmer and Lopez will. Fulmer and Lopez, as you said, that lines the Twins up They know who their six, their seven, their eight, and their nine. They know who their four guys are. For the Blue Jays, I think it'll be a little bit more matchup-based, and where I think it'll really help them is earlier in games, fourth, fifth inning, down a run, down two. They'll feel better about the guy going into that situation than some of the choices they had to make earlier this year. The lower leverage guys are not going to pitch as much medium or high leverage as they did earlier in the year. And I think that's what, you know, Bass will slide a couple guys down a spot. Pop will probably pitch earlier in the game, middle relief, get out of a jam, try to get a ground ball. They'll help. They'll definitely help. Do they, you know, are they Fulmer and Lopez? No, but you know, again, look at Bass's numbers, 150 ERA or whatever it is, a strikeout an inning. Like, you can't knock the numbers, and he was pretty good here 2 years ago, and he looks like he's better now. So, you know, and Pop throws 97. So let's see. You know, let's give it a little while to sort itself out and see what the roles look like.
Dan, for the record, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., fourth among regulars in WRC+. He's 124. Kirk, Vladdy, Teo, and then Lourdes at 124. And for the season.
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, it's better than George Springer. It's better than Matt Chapman. So, yeah, it's pretty solid. Enjoy the game tonight, Dan. Thanks.
Thanks. All right, Ben, thanks. Take care.
You too. Dan Schulman in Minnesota, getting set for the Blue Jays and Twins. As the Blue Jays, you know, continue to assert themselves in the American League wild card race, but don't completely eliminate the possibility of them winning the division. I mean, it's a long road to hoe. Seven games, though, between the Blue Jays and Yankees remain before the end of the season. 10.5 game lead the Yankees have on the Jays in the American League East. And you don't have to go that far back in baseball history to see a division lead that was even bigger than this one dwindle. The 1995 Mariners trailed the Angels by 13 games in the American League West on August 3rd. It's August 5th today. And the Mariners just ran the table basically the rest of the way and won the division. It helped the Angels stunk as well. You need both things to happen. Unlikely this year because the Yankees, they were a good team before the trade deadline, and then after the trade deadline made themselves even better. But they have lost two in a row, okay? And the Blue Jays' schedule, as we know, is one of the easiest in the second half of the season in Major League Baseball. I want to go back to that conversation about Lourdes Gurriel Jr., though, a little bit. Because, you know what? I'm guilty of it too, because it's, I don't want to bog people down with advanced stats. Like, WRC plus needs a total rebrand, because that sounds like, yeah, you don't want to know what that is. And honestly, I can't tell you specifically. I just know that smarter people than me have created a number where 100 is league average, and anything above that is percentage points higher than league average. So Lourdes Gurriel Jr., more than 20% better than league average at creating runs, right? That's what you're trying to do as an offensive player. When we talk about OPS, you're weighting slugging percentage and on base the same, because you're just mashing them together. On base plus slugging. That's what OPS is, and you shouldn't do that, really, because the difference between a single and a double, while significant, is not as significant as getting out and getting a single. Like, that is that's as simply as I can put it. Making an out and walking or hitting a single, the difference between that is it's definitely bigger than the difference between a single and a double, or a double and a triple, or a triple and a home run. And when we talk about OPS, we weight things the same way. And I don't know if when Lourdes Gurriel Jr. gets to free agency, other teams will understand that this is a conscious decision. This guy is such a freak when it comes to being able to put the bat on the ball that he can just decide one day, hey, I know I got great power, and I'm super streaky, and, you know, I hit the ball out of the yard a whole lot in September last year, almost single-handedly led the Blue Jays into the playoffs. We missed by one game. That was on the strength of my September. I can do that. I can hit home runs, but I've chosen not to, because I want to hit 330. I want to have a 360 on base. I just, not everybody can do that. It's just, it's unbelievable what he's been able to accomplish this season. And especially on a team where there's plenty of power top to bottom throughout this lineup, you don't need another guy to hit you 30, 35, 40 home runs. You'd like as many as possible, but you definitely don't need it. It'll be interesting to see where Bo Bichette hits the rest of the season. I assume it's fifth again today, but Dan's right. I mean, Teoscar Hernandez has earned his spot in the four spot in this lineup because he was off to a horrible start. He got hurt and then came off the IL and then was bad for like a couple of weeks. But since then, he's been basically all the way back to himself. Vladdy, when we talk about disappointments this season, I know it's easy to look at Vlad and Bo the same way because the numbers are for both of them are off of what they were from a season ago. But Vladdy's been a well above average offensive producer basically from the start of the season. And now the numbers are really starting to creep up. But, you know, he's had a 350 on base essentially all season long, been one of the league leaders in home runs essentially all season long. There has not been a moment like that for Bo. It really hasn't. And it's not to say that he's an unplayable player this season. He's an average to slightly below average shortstop in Major League Baseball, which is not what you expect out of a key cog and one of the superstars on this Blue Jays team. There are just plainly too many hitters that are outperforming him for him to be hitting fourth in this lineup. Hitting fifth makes a whole lot of sense. I'm really interested to see Zach Pop. He was the only one of the new additions we didn't see yesterday that's with this team because Anthony Bass got into the game. I know what Anthony Bass is. Saw Anthony Bass before. He was good. He's a good player. The Blue Jays had him the first time. He's apparently a better player now because he throws the slider more. That's great. That's more than great. Do I think Anthony Bass now was all of a sudden like the second coming of Mariano Rivera? Probably not. Like I think if you have Anthony Bass against Aaron Judge and it's October, you don't feel great. I mean, do you feel great anybody against Aaron Judge? Probably not. But yeah, no, I think you could do better than Anthony Bass against Aaron Judge in October, but that's fine. He's a fine addition. Zach Pop, because Dan's right. Like, you know, we talk about swing and miss. We talk about velocity. This Blue Jays bullpen needed more velocity. Well, Zach Pop actually does have a lot of velocity. And maybe there's a comparison to a former Blue Jay, Henderson Alvarez, right? Like Henderson Alvarez threw almost 100 as well. He didn't strike people out because it was a 99-mile-an-hour sinker ball, which is apparently what Zach Pop possesses. That's and was getting results with it this year. He wasn't striking people out, but he was, by and large, well, he definitely wasn't walking people with the Marlins, and he was, by and large, getting the job done in middle relief for the Marlins. Really interested to see where he ends up in this Blue Jays bullpen. I don't think it's in a leverage role, especially out of the gates, but yeah, he could help. It's just nobody they got are the guys that the Twins got. And they already have a guy in Duran who throws 103. But they got a closer on a team that was above 500 in Jorge Lopez. And they got Michael Fulmer, who used to be, you know, one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball, and has turned himself into a nice reliever. We'll see if we see any of those guys tonight as the Blue Jays try to secure themselves of at least a series split in Minneapolis. When we come back, we'll go to Calgary, where they are celebrating. Well, it's summer in Calgary. They're always celebrating, but especially after Jonathan Huberdeau signs an 8-year extension. Ryan Leslie, Sportsnet's own, next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.